Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Thursday, August 20th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Joe Biden's Shining Moment? Question mark. Obviously, today was the conclusion of the Democratic National Convention, with, of course, the final and keynote speaker being that of Vice President Joe Biden. We're going to get into some of that analysis. But because today is Thursday, I want to do our traditional podcast. I want to go over initial jobless claims, continuing claims, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, and some market performance. Right now, across the news wires, we have Japanese inflation hitting a four-month high. The annual inflation rate in Japan rose to 0.3% in July from over a three-year low of 0.1% in the prior month and well above market consensus of 0.1%. It was the highest rate since March of this year, mainly due to an increase in food prices. Oh, food. Who eats? So we don't have to worry about this. It's in food prices. We've only been warning about this for over a year. Meantime, Japan's core consumer prices were unchanged in July from a year earlier. It is the core goods and services that matter the most in this environment, especially. Things that people are no longer going to buy because they're going to say, well, I am now really on a budget. I am now really going to have to start thinking about my spending behaviors. All this nonsense that people buy, crap they can't afford, that they don't use, that they barely ever touch. Some of these things are just going to go by the wayside. I'm not overly concerned about the general price level of these goods and services. I'm concerned about the necessities. I'm concerned about energy. I'm concerned about food. I'm concerned about shelter. I'm concerned about medical costs. The things that people need, the necessities. In one country after the next, these prices are going up. One of the exceptions that you might see is that with energy, because of that massive collapse in pricing that we saw over the summer. Pay attention, folks. This is just the beginning. Inflation with stagnant economy is stagflation, and depending on the country, it's very possible, if not probable, that many will experience hyperinflation. And do not think for a second that it cannot happen in industrialized countries, including the United States of America, because it can. And if we continue on the path in which we are on, and it appears that there is no stopping, then we are likely to experience at least stagflation in the not too distant future. The dollar index is now trading at 92.60. Again, just a continual decline in the dollar index. That means the euro is up $1.18, almost 19 cents. The euro to the dollar, the great British pound, $1.32. Just, again, this in and of itself is a huge topic of discussion, which is why we have done several podcasts on the strength or the weakness of the dollar, because this is going to have global consequences regardless of the direction of the dollar, whether it's a swan song where it makes new highs before it inevitably collapses, or if it just continues its descent. I don't know which way it's going to go. If you're going to get that swan song and make new highs, or if it's just going to continue drifting lower. But net-net, the dollar status as a global reserve currency, it's on notice. And over the coming years, this will be a process. This will most likely take time. We are likely going to lose that global reserve status. And when that happens, it is not going to be a pretty picture, especially for people in this country, because you're buying and trading in U.S. dollars. On the share front, Tesla just continues to go up almost another 100 points just today, up 5.27%, trading almost at $2,000 a share. Tesla, now one of the largest companies in the world by market cap, barely makes a profit because of government subsidies and tax credits, but let's make no issue of that. Let's pay no attention to this. Let's believe that Tesla doesn't face any type of serious competition. Of course, they do. Let's just think that this stock can go to the moon. This very well may prove to be one of the poster childs of this everything bubble. Mark my words. Tesla and a whole slew of other ones, but Tesla might just take the cake. On the commodity front, WTI is trading at $42.94. A barrel Brent is at $45. Natural gas, $2.36. Again, continuing a very strong rally, taking us to prices not seen since earlier this year, late last year. Spot gold is trading at $1,948 an ounce. Silver, spot prices at $27.36 an ounce. Uncle Sam's 10-year Treasury junk note is yielding 0.64%. Now on to the Department of Labor and the initial jobless claims. For the week ending August 15th, 1,106,000 Americans have filed for initial jobless claims. This is an increase from the prior week ending August 8th of 135,000. So remember, last week was the first week in, what was it, 18 weeks thereabouts, where we finally saw a number south of that 1 million number, which of course is good. Fewer people filing. That's a good thing. That's where we want to be. Following week, week ending August 15th, we are once again over that $1 million figure. This, unfortunately, is no surprise to us here because the continuation of various states closing down again, slowing down their reopenings of their respective economies, and then, of course, not having the full picture on the jobs market because of all of the distortionary effects that have come down the pike from the government, especially the PPP loans, which of course will turn into grants if those employers either bring back their employees whom they've already laid off or do not lay off those current employees. Just keep everybody on payroll. Doesn't matter if there's demand for their services or not. If you want that loan to be forgiven, thus turning it into a grant, you better bring everybody back or not lay them off. And remember, last week we talked about this. We had a little anecdotal evidence through some articles that we covered. Okay, yep, employers brought people back off of unemployment. But we're all standing there. We're not doing much because there's not a lot of demand. Now, what happens if that demand does not return, but the PPP loan is exhausted? You've used up all the money that you've taken. So you've satisfied your end of the deal as the employer. Now, I don't need to keep these people on anymore, or if I do, I'm going to have to cut their pay, I'm going to have to cut their hours. Get the picture? Huge amount of distortions out there, and I told you guys this from the beginning, that this was going to be the case. That it's going to be very difficult to make heads or tails of the real picture out there, especially with respect to the jobs market. This is what the government does best. It distorts things. And as I always tell this audience, garbage in, garbage out. If you're trying to make a good decision, you need good information. Well, the government's making that very difficult. And if you have poor data, you're more likely going to make a poor decision. That's logical. That statement should not surprise anybody. The government doesn't want their figures, unemployment figures, looking terrible. Of course, they already have. Of course, they continue to be. But it'd be even worse if it wasn't for these PPP loans. And I unfortunately believe that these numbers are going to get worse before they get better. Because I do not see demand for all of these goods and services coming roaring back anytime soon. I do not believe in the V-shaped economic recovery. Don't believe it. Didn't believe it from the beginning. I haven't seen anything to convince me otherwise now. Can you make the argument that there's been a V-shaped recovery in the stock market? Of course you can. They're throwing everything and the kitchen sink at these markets to keep them propped up. And that's exactly what they're doing. They are propping them up. This is not on a solid foundation. These valuations are at record highs or are nearing record highs. Some of them blow through the dot-com era. Some of them blow through where we were in 1929. Some of them blow through where we were in the great financial crisis. This is not a healthy environment. It's extremely overextended. It's extremely overbought. The valuations make absolutely no sense whatsoever. And so many people out there, especially newbies and rookies, that can't bet on sports because they ain't playing them like they used to, thinking, well, I got an extra $1,200 in stimulus. I got an extra $600 a week because I'm unemployed. Whatever the case may be, let me open up an E-Trade account, TD Ameritrade, Charles Schwab, Robinhood, and let me buy up bankrupt companies because, well, they're trading at $1, $2 a share. Clearly, there's a lot of value there. Not understanding what's going on. Clearly, a lot of them don't understand what a stock split is. They must think that it is free money. Well, we're going to do a 5-for-1 stock split. Hey, they gave me free money. I'm 5 times richer than I was the week before. That's not, of course, how it works. This audience understands this. But people out there don't. They think that that's exactly what it is. They think this is a gift. They think it is free money. I couldn't imagine the look on these people's faces when these stock splits actually take effect in their brokerage accounts and they say, why am I not 4 or 5 times richer than I was last week? Isn't that how that works? I mean, how many Google searches are there going to be for this one? And you think I'm joking? I mean, if that isn't a sign of a top or a mania or a bubble, I don't know what is. This is getting out of control. It's been out of control. And so many people are going to be devastated on the other side of this. And there's historical precedent to see this type of V-shaped recovery. A stock market rally that can last several months, as this one has. We experienced this in the Dow back in 1929 to 1930 following the crash. But what do we know happened? Because we did a mini-series on that history. And the jokers back then in government set the groundwork. that created the Great Depression. And the jokers today are using that same playbook, which is going to cause, which we are in the midst of, the greatest depression now. So don't be surprised if this market says we're overextended, we're priced to quote-unquote perfection, but it ain't perfect, so down we go. And over the course of a couple few years, following that stock market crash in 1929, the Dow continued its decline and lost 90%. Not a pretty picture, folks. Dot-com era, NASDAQ lost 80%. Great financial crisis, major indices were down 50%+. Think it can't happen this time, with things are even more overvalued in the midst of a pandemic, in the midst of what appears to be a cold war between the world's two largest economies, total collapse of several smaller countries right now with more waiting in the wings, 30 to 40 million Americans possibly going to be evicted over the next several months. Give me a break. Connect the dots. Don't believe the BS that's fed to you every day from the White House or from the mainstream media or from these business channels, CNBC, Bloomberg, telling everybody that everything's rosy, everything's peachy, everything's going to be back to normal. Give me a break. It wasn't normal when it was normal. It was unsustainable. Continuing jobless claims. Again, this lags. So this is going to be for the week ending August 8th. Continuing claims, 14,844,000. This is a decrease from the week prior, which would have been the week ending August 1st. A decrease of 636 million. Again, trending in the right direction, but still distorted because of the government policies. Adding it all up for the week ending August 1st, taking into consideration regular state, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, pandemic unemployment assistance, pandemic emergency unemployment compensation, extended benefits, state additional benefits, work share gives us a grand total, a week ending August 1st, of 28,059,349 Americans. From the week prior, July 25th, this is a decrease of some 197,000. Again, right direction. We have a lot of stimulus, quote-unquote stimulus, that has expired. We also have something that could prove to be somewhat devastating to gig workers, especially in the state of California, where basically they are dictating, the idiots out of Sacramento are dictating to companies such as Uber and Lyft that they have to make their drivers their employees, as opposed to just contracting them out and making them 1099s. It's basically an independent contractor. Oh, no. You now have to make them employees, which of course just shreds their business model. These companies aren't profitable to begin with. We talk about these extreme crazy valuations too on Lyft and Uber, but that's beside the point. Their business model is our drivers are independent contractors. They're not making money under that model. What makes you think they're going to make money if they got to put these people on payroll and are responsible for taxes and are responsible for other liabilities and responsible for what? You have to pay them health insurance? I mean, they're leaving. They are suspending their operations in California, which I think Lyft has about 1 million drivers just in the state of California alone. This is what you get when you have politicians who think they know best, that want to dictate from on high how you have to operate your business. Well, if they are telling you how to operate your business, I guess it's not your business. So what are going to happen to these individuals? I'm sure they weren't that busy to begin with, but I'm sure some of them were still in operation. So are these individuals now going to file for unemployment? Time will tell. We'll see it. But there you have it. Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Well, we're back over that $7 trillion threshold once again. The week prior, we stood at $6,957 billion. Now we're at $7,010 billion. This is for Wednesday, August 19th. Now, if Congress comes back and, you know, if they get their act together and they say, oh, well, we're going to come up with some more spending, another trillion and a half, another 2 trillion. I mean, who cares? Right? Well, that's going to have to be financed by somebody. I mean, we're broke. Taxpayers are broke. The states are broke. So who's going to have to pay for all this? Well, it's going to have to be the Federal Reserve because we're a banana republic. They're going to have to print the money. And that's exactly what they're going to do. I stated over a year ago, it's one of our videos, a Capital Economics presentation, are central banks trapped? Yes, of course they're trapped. Because the option of admitting fault, of coming out and telling the people the truth, that ain't an option. They're not going to do that. So they are going to continue to kick the can down the road. They're going to continue to lie, distort, deceive, because that's what they do. It's in their, it's basically their charter. The Fed's charter, the ECB's bank, it's what all central bankers do. It's what all governments do. That's why everybody is sick and tired of being sick and tired. Social unrest, economic unrest, it's all connected. It's all connected. Understand this. $7 trillion, we're just getting warmed up. We're just getting warmed up. Because if you're curious to know where we stand right now with our national debt, $26,664 billion. Even the official deficit right now stands at nearly $2.9 trillion. But of course, the actual deficit right now is at $4,182 billion. We're broke, folks. That's exactly what this means. We are as broke as a joke. The states are broke. The cities are broke. The feds are broke. The citizens are broke. So we got to go to the printing press. And of course, you're going to have the political arguments. Well, Republicans, it wasn't the fault of corporations that this pandemic hit them, and it hit them so hard. So we can continue to bail them out at the drop of a hat. But the states and the people, I guess it was their fault, because that's where the Republicans now want to draw the line. No more additional weekly benefit, and the states have been mismanaged. That's their fault. But the corporations, it wasn't their fault. How does this jive? Can somebody explain this one to me? Oh, that's right. The states don't lobby. The states don't fill their coffers, their political campaign coffers. The people don't fill their political campaign coffers. But the corporations do. Drop of the hat. And this is approved on both sides. But this is where the Republicans want to draw the line. It's okay for the Federal Reserve to abandon their charter and to actually get a runaround from Congress through the Nobody Cares Act to create the SPV, the Special Purpose Vehicle, so the Federal Reserve can go out and buy corporate debt from the world's largest corporations. But screw the states and screw the people. Now, I don't know how they can make that argument, but that's what they're attempting to do. Of course, I am against and have been against all bailouts. But if you're going to give it to these idiots, well, then give it to the rest of us. And if spending just boosts and drives the economy so much, then why don't they give us $6,000 a week? Or in those stimulus checks, why was it $1,200? Why wasn't it $12,000 a week? But I digress. Now on to Mr. Biden. He, of course, was the final speaker, and of course he accepted the nomination, which I do have to say, I thought that was on Tuesday evening when they did the roll call. I forgot to mention, I did think that that was actually pretty good, because the roll call, obviously this was a virtual convention, if you will. So all of the delegates were home in their respective states and obviously on camera. And a lot of them did their best to sort of highlight the geography, the natural elements of their respective state or territory, which I thought was a pretty cool idea because it really highlighted the beauty of this country from coast to coast. And I hope the Republicans during their three-ring circus next week do the same thing. And that's what I want you to also remember, that these are three-ring circuses. One clown is going to wear a blue nose, and another is going to wear a red nose. Okay? That's all it is. They're going to make you cry, they're going to make you laugh, get you upset, frustrated, happy, whatever. And they're hoping that you forget about everything that they have done. That everything's going to be peaches and rainbows. We see right through it. But nonetheless, we're going to discuss the speech, because a lot of people still think that Joe Biden or Donald Trump are going to make some sort of major difference for the better. I don't think so. I don't think so, and I think I have a lot of evidence in my corner. But feel free to disagree. That's what this podcast is all about. Joe Biden gave a speech. I think it kept with the tone that he and Kamala Harris struck a week ago when they were together for the first time after he announced Senator Kamala Harris was going to be his running mate. And I stated then, and I've stated earlier this week, and I will continue to state this, that if they can maintain that tone, if they can maintain their discipline to stick to the script, that may very well prove successful in landing them in the White House. This was not a speech, in my opinion, that really motivated me. Now, of course, I understand Joe Biden. I'm not voting for this guy. But trying to look at it maybe through the lens of the average Joe, maybe somebody who hasn't necessarily paid too much attention up until now, it was a decent speech. It kept to that tone. It was even-handed. It was level. Was he very emotional on it? I wouldn't say so. I think that was probably somewhat on purpose. He just wants to be and portray himself as just, I'm just Joe. I'm just Joe Biden. I'm not the guy who's going to scream. I'm not the guy that's going to be the loudest talker in the room. I'm not going to shout at you or down at you. I'm just nice and steady, easy as she goes. Trying to continue with that contrast between his management and leadership style versus that of President Trump. Obviously, we'll know the answer in a couple months, how effective this convention was versus the Republican convention versus the debates. And God only knows what else. This is 2020. We still got several months to go. Anything can happen. I'm waiting for an alien invasion. If it happens, I'm not going to be surprised given how this year goes, has been going. Nothing went from Joe Biden, unfortunately, really stuck out to say, my goodness, that really inspires me. It just wasn't there. Now, that's not to say that for some people, just by having the contrast between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, maybe they thought that he did. I mean, clearly you have, you know, I was watching CNN after his remarks, after his speech, and obviously a lot of Democratic strategists and people who support Biden are saying this was his greatest moment, he rose to the occasion, this is exactly what he had to do, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's the spin room. They're going to say the same thing about Donald Trump next week from his Republican supporters. Again, proving to you that that is the show. This is divide and conquer. I want you to see through it. This is what they continue to do. Give you an emotional story. Try to get that connection. continuing to paint Joe Biden as somebody who just has an endless amount of empathy. He's a family man. He's a good father, a good husband, a good grandfather. I'm not disputing that. I don't think many people are. I don't even know how many necessarily people dispute that Donald Trump is a good father. Of course, people can say something. Maybe he's a good father, a good husband, what have you. Good grandfather. But okay, good. I hope he is all those things. I hope Joe Biden is a good family man. I want somebody who's going to tell the truth. I want somebody who's going to lead. I want somebody who's going to tackle the structural issues in this country. I don't want the BS. I don't want the hype. I don't want the deflection. I don't want the blame game. I want leadership. Biden's been there for 40 years. Very much responsible for a lot of this crap. And I thought it was laughable when they were trying to sort of hype him up in being there, of course, with Obama, and they quote-unquote saved the auto industry instead of them going through bankruptcy. And I'm thinking to myself, that's exactly what should have happened. They should have went through bankruptcy. That's the corrective process. If there was talent there, if there were productive assets there, they would have been purchased from somebody else. Or these companies could have restructured themselves and came out even healthier. That's part of the process. That's how it's supposed to work. That's free market capitalism. But we're a banana republic and have been for quite a while. We don't adhere to these values. But we'll blame free market capitalism when anything fails. See how this works? You understand this? Joe Biden's shining moment? I don't think so. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't enough to get him over the finish line. I think the debates will clearly carry a lot of weight. I know a lot of people are anticipating this. I think it's really going to be more or less a national embarrassment more than anything else. I mean, Donald Trump is not a policy wonk. Joe Biden has policies. I don't know how much he's going to push them. I mean, clearly he's going to have to start talking about them. Clearly Donald Trump is going to have to start stating his vision for how his next 4 years in office would look should he win re-election. I haven't heard much in way of that. Even on CNN with the Republican on there, who does support this president, even he admitted that Donald Trump is not doing a very good job at all of explaining his vision for the next 4 years. I haven't heard much either, except the demonization, Sleepy Joe, he's been there for 40 years, China this, China that, Ukraine this, Ukraine that, higher taxes, lower taxes. Now, is that enough? It might be. It might be. But for me, he's going to have to do a little bit more than that. I would expect a little bit more at this level. And remember, folks, do not forget, and I'm not going to let you forget, that your taxes are going up. Your taxes are going up. Local, county, state, no doubt about it. Too many shortfalls, too many broken promises, too many weasels. Your taxes are going up. Assuming even if you assume Trump wins and is somehow able to cut taxes again, he ain't going to cut spending, because if you cut spending, your GDP figures, at least in the short term, are going to take a hit. It's a basic arithmetic equation, and if you cut something from it, it's going down. Even though, long term, that is part of the solution, is cutting spending so more money can remain in productive hands, he ain't going to cut it. The Republicans ain't going to cut it. And the Democrats sure ain't going to cut it. So you know how that's going to be made up, don't you? Inflation. And the inflation tax is always the most devastating of taxes. Nobody's going to tell you this. Not in the government anyway. But I'm going to tell you. So your taxes are going up, as is your inflation tax. Make no mistake about it. So They can pit against you. We're going to raise taxes. We're going to cut taxes. I'm going to do this. Nah, your taxes are going up, man. Make no mistake about it. So next week, we are going to have the Republican National Convention. You know, I imagine theirs is going to be primarily virtual as well. There are some pros to it, some cons. It's kind of weird, obviously, watching these people. How do you, you know, you kind of stand there, because typically you might be feeding off of an audience that's applauding you. You can sort of walk up to people. You know, you sort of have that human-to-human interaction. Now it's all on camera. It kind of gets a little bit awkward. But nonetheless, the Democrats pulled off what I would consider a relatively successful convention. I imagine the Republicans will do the same. We, of course, will discuss that next week as well. What's going to be interesting is how Donald Trump performs without a large audience. Because Donald Trump feeds off of that energy. There's no question about it. Donald Trump is very good with large crowds. That's what a lot of people like about him. That energy that he is able to feed off of in that environment. Will he be able to maintain a certain level of energy that his supporters are used to, even though if he's not surrounded by tens of thousands of his supporters? So that's what we're going to be paying attention to, as well as the policies and the Republican and the Trump administration's vision for at least the next 4 years. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.